watch the news and have to wonder if this country's going crazy.
Well, welcome back to Unite IE Radio. My name is Greg Brennan with John Hancock and Don Dix. Unite IE Radio is the show for the most important political office, that of the private citizen. Our guest today is James Bennett. We've been talking about the history of the Magna Carta, the development of our liberty and our Constitution and Bill of Rights. And James has written a book called America 3.0, which is very fascinating. And we were starting to talk about it in the last segment. James, can you summarize, what is your book about?
Well, basically, it's about the stress and the political turmoil that we've been going through for the last decade or so in this country, and looking back over America's history, trying to understand where are these problems coming from, why is the stress so intense at this time, and how might it resolve itself?
What problems? You mentioned, where are these problems coming from? What problems are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about the very extreme polarization we're now having in our political system. The people are basically they're talking past each other. Very large questions about how large the government should be, what role it should have for citizens, what the right level of taxation is, how to deal with the very large deficit positions and very large amount of unfunded liabilities that the country is piling up day after day. So, and people have entirely different views of where these are coming from, where the solution is. And what we said is, in the book, my co-author Michael Lotus and I, that America started out as an agricultural country at the time of the Revolution, and its institutions were designed to deal with that kind of society and those kind of problems. When the Industrial Revolution happened in America, it went from being 97% farmers to 50% farmers, and then less and less and less to, they're now at, I think, 1% or less of the population. The institutions stopped working very well. One of the big, of course, the slavery issue was a huge one, led to the Civil War. The Civil War solved that one, but created whole new sets of things. The country was actually in a sort of low-grade endemic civil war because of the labor movement and the struggles about the unionization of labor. They had very violent strikes. It was not unusual for dozens or occasionally larger numbers to get killed in conflicts. People were very concerned. And what we said was, well, basically America went from America 1.0, the sort of placid, decentralized agricultural country that Jefferson had envisioned as where America was going, to this highly centralized, industrialized country where we created large bureaucratic institutions because a lot of people felt in good faith that was the only way we could solve the problems of that era. And in truth, when you got to World War II, it's not clear that anything except a large centralized institution could have mobilized the country so quickly and turned out, 10,000 B-17s from a gigantic plant they built in, 12 months in Willow Run, Michigan.
Or the battleship Iowa in a year and a half that had desalinization plants and three backup computers, and they built that in a year and a half.
And not only did they built that, but they built, I don't know, at least a dozen sister ships identical to it.
Right. Okay. But, the capacity to build that was built through the free enterprise system and economic freedom. That capacity for the government to harness that for the war effort was already existing because of our system.
Exactly, but the point is that when we got to World War II, we created these big centralized bureaucracies to harness that and direct it. And people came out of that war with the idea that's the way you get things done. And it was people who grew up in that experience and that mentality, and also with this very unusual, national consensus, and almost everybody was behind this. You did not have big protests, you did not have big dissenting populations after Pearl Harbor, and this was a very unusual period in American history.
So there was
people like Lyndon Johnson, who grew up in the middle of this wartime bureaucracy, and even Richard Nixon, who also was part of that bureaucracy, you know, we're starting to say, well, we got to deal with poverty. We have to deal with integrating this unintegrated segment of the population. We have to deal with all this environmental pollution, which at that time we were talking about real things like lead and mercury in the environment. And they automatically reached for that centralized bureaucratic toolkit. Right or wrong, that's what they did. And now we're paying the price. They all had unintended consequences, and now we're living with the unintended consequences.
So 2.0 is the development, both an economic 2.0 of the industrial state and a political 2.0 of the centralized federal government bureaucracy. What do you see for America 3.0?
Well, what we see is the breakdown. In a lot of cases, it's going to be a literal bankruptcy. The systems, were counted on very rapid, large population growth to keep them actuarially solvent, like Social Security and Medicare. And of course, that's not happening. So they're running out of money, literally, and they're running out of the ability to print money. And, we call for what we call big haircut, which is an all-around redressing and, in some cases, write-off of debt, because it's going to be necessary. But also, we just have to stop spending 40% of the GDP through the government. That's no longer a viable model. I think if we could pare it back to something like 20% of GDP at all levels of government combined, we have something that might be sustainable in the future.
Well, you mentioned a story about, when there was a changeover in Britain between the Labour and the Conservative. You want to, tell that to our listeners, because that's a very interesting and telling story.
There are still people who think that the social democratic model is working more or less in Europe. It isn't there either. And this is a very good story about in 2010, when the Conservatives first took over from the Labour Party, the outgoing Secretary to the Treasury, not the same as Secretary of the Treasury, which is the Chancellor, but it was a high-level civil servant, left a note for his Conservative successor who came into office, and when the successor envelope, and it was very, very short and simple. It says, "Dear so-and-so, I'm sorry, there is no money. Best of luck."
So this was the equivalent of the British Treasury, the official leaving his office and then advising the person that was coming into the office, saying, "Hey, we got no dough here."
Exactly. There is basically the hardwired demands in, written into statutory form for expenditure exceeded the amount of money that was being brought in by all the taxes and all the other means they had at their disposal. There literally was no money unless they were just going to start acting like Germany in the 20s and printing it off the printing press.
Do you think Geithner left a similar envelope for Yellen?
No, he said, I ran out on TurboTax and we're in great shape.
as Margaret Thatcher said, the problem with socialism is sooner or later you run out of other people's money.
Yes, and as we were discussing before the show, you look even at social democratic places like Sweden and you discover that they have been backpedaling on a lot of the old assumptions of the 2.0 state. I mean, they privatized things in Sweden that we have not privatized in America. They have a full-blown voucher system in education, which is working fine. They've privatized all their hospitals to private management, which, by the way, is working fine. They privatized the railroads. They privatized the post office, which is, if you bring it up in America, it's like you crazy, mad Tea Party teabagger.
Let me stop you there, because we're past time in this segment.
Okay.
And let me ask you one more question. We talk about every week on the show about the expansion, how government is running amok and taking away our freedoms. But you're fundamentally positive and optimistic that our freedom and our way of life is going to will prevail. In 1 minute or less, why is that?
We have a heritage of freedom and individualism that at root is over 1,000 years old. Magna Carta is just one of the first signposts in history that we can still see. We are by nature free people, and ultimately the odds are that we will prevail over an obsolete central government.
Well, I like that thought. That's a great thought to leave it on. Freedom and personal liberty will prevail. But it's very hard right now with the direction that we see things going, especially here in this country, to hold on. There's got to be a role of the individual in this country to help maintain that without just having blind optimism that it's just going to happen without citizen involvement.
Well, notice the odds are it's a slam dunk.
All right. Very
There's
good.
A fight. There's a fight, no doubt about it. There's going to be a lot of turmoil, and it's going to look dark. Going to look darkest before the dawn, and we're not at the darkest moment yet.
So it gets worse before it gets better.
It gets worse before it gets better, but I think there is reason to hope that we will once again, as we have over many centuries, prevail.
Well, James, thank you for being on the show today. I appreciate you coming on, especially on such short notice. And again, I look forward to meeting you at the Magna Carta event. And people listening, this is important. This is important history. We have to be able to understand what's going on, that we inherited something, as James just mentioned, that's 1,000 years old. And if we don't preserve it, as Don just mentioned, we're going to lose it. So again, James, thank you for coming on. His book, America 3.0, is available at Amazon. I read it to cover to cover. It's a great book, so please check it out.
My pleasure, and look forward to seeing you Sunday.
We will be back after a message of the sponsor for this half hour.
On United IE Radio, All-Star Collision, the kings of rock and roll.
When you're in an auto accident, you want quality repairs done as fast as possible. All you need is All-Star. For over 20 years, All-Star Collision in Corona has delivered quality work and customer service with honesty and integrity. They offer free pickup and delivery, free estimates, and they're approved by all major insurance companies. They repair aluminum and fiberglass bodies with computerized frame straightening to get your car or truck back to factory spec perfection. You'll have your vehicle back fast and in showroom condition, safety checked, washed and detailed, fluids topped off with a lifetime warranty on paint and repairs. So exercise your freedom of choice and call All-Star Collision, the kings of wreck and roll, at 951-279-9161. Mention AM590 and get a free rental car for up to 5 days or $100 off your repairs. 951-279-9161. All-Star Collision. 951-279-9161.
AM590. The answer. Let's get
it started. Hello, this is Senator Mike Morrell urging you to tune in every Saturday at 11:30 a.m. to the Unite Inland Empire radio program.
Well, welcome back to Unite IE Radio. This is Greg Britton with Don Dix and John Hancock. And across the world, we see ISIS is on the march. The country's $18 trillion in debt. We have the weakest economic recovery since World War II. Record numbers of people are out of the labor force. You have open borders. But here's what the New York Times has on its front page.
And as we head into the 2016 presidential election, no one's asking harder questions of the candidates. Hillary Clinton's email scandal, Jeb Bush's possible fundraising violations. And now they've set their sights on one of the hottest, fastest rising politicians in the race. This is going to be devastating.
The New York Times ran a story about Senator Rubio's parking tickets and his traffic history.
Oh, no!
He's a goner.
Not only that, but they're also condemning him for paying off a student loan.
As Stewart said on his show, Senator, have you no sense of insolvency?
Well, the thing is, this is the elitist. They have their people, and only their people can be president. One of the things that attacks on his financial records was he has a home in a working class neighborhood.
With big windows.
With big windows.
That let in more sunlight than the average window. How, Senator, how dare you?
He drives a $50,000 car that he leases. He is basically...
Which we can't blame him for because, of course, his wife had 14 traffic tickets. So, of course, you're going to lease a car.
In an 18-year period. So, the whole thing is this aristocratic view of New York Times. I mean, Hillary Clinton and the Clintons are worth millions of dollars. They received, their foundation illegally receives, it's pay for play money she received as Secretary of State. They ignore that. Why? Because she's part of the political class.
And not only that, the New York Times recently ran an article or a column in which the writer advocated students defaulting on their student loans.
Well, that sounds like a really socialist thing to do. Not only that, but they condemn him for the purchase of a $80,000 dinghy. Meanwhile, our Secretary of State, John Kerry, buys a $7 million yacht in a state neighboring his own state of residency and moors it in that state. So guess what?
Avoid
he can taxes. Avoid paying $500,000 in taxes, which includes a $75,000 excise tax because he purchased a luxury item.
Well, the typical neoliberal philosophy, do as I say, not as I do.
And not a mention of that is in sight as they devastate Marco Rubio for stepping outside his middle class shackles.
Well, last week when we had Steve Stockman out here talking, you know, one of the things he pointed out was the New York Times actually had an article that the Obama administration was basically controversy free. It had no
scandals.
No scandals.
Not a
smidgen. Because Obama doesn't drive himself, I guess.
Well, Obama told us himself, not a smidgen.
Well, speaking of scandals, there's a new one brewing in Washington, D.C., because something that the average, I'm sure if you went around and surveyed the average American about what TPP is, they would probably tell you something that rolls off of a spool next to a John.
That could be, although it's been getting increasing attention in the media, so much so that just this morning, establishment Republican Paul Ryan was condemning the internet for trying to report on what's in the Trans-Pacific Partnership treaty that they're considering.
Now, didn't Paul Ryan recently channel Nancy Pelosi regarding, okay, TPP is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, right?
Right.
And this is a giant trade deal that sits in a locked room in the bottom of the Senate building, or is it the Congressional building? Which
it's one of the two. And only the members can go in. They can't take notes, and therefore, by law, they cannot reveal what is in that proposed agreement.
What could go wrong?
I mean, this is a step further than you have to pass the bill to know what's in the bill. I mean, we're not even going to know the bill at all.
And that's exactly what Paul Ryan said. Which, when I referenced, he was channeling Nancy Pelosi. Now, the bottom line on this, as I see it from the reading that I've done, is essentially the big takeaway from what I've read is that through this deal, this independent commission is set up, one representative from every country, and there's about 12 or 13 so far that are party to this.
And they can add more later.
And they can add more later to this living document, which is essentially like Obamacare, passing Obamacare with the authority for this commission that's made up of these 13 countries to amend this agreement and essentially giving away American sovereignty as a part of becoming a part of this commission.
Right. Most of the agreement is not about trade. I mean, we can debate whether lowering tariffs and trade barriers is a good thing for American workers or it's not. But most of it has to do with these governance issues, obviously advocating our sovereignty. It's going to be like the European Commission, which is an unelected body that makes laws in Europe that overrides the laws passed by the people's elected representatives there.
Well, and these two stories, you see the press with Rubio and just basically doing the bidding of certain people that they favor. And then you see government, even Republicans, going through and passing bills that we are not allowed to see. And then the same people wonder why there's no confidence or trust in government anymore.
As far as I'm concerned on the TPP deal, the person that everybody needs to be following is Jeff Sessions.
Yep.
He's the guy that is actually out front debunking everything that is not being even said about this deal. He is out front raising the warning flag and talking about this commission that essentially yields America's sovereignty. This deal that's supposed to be about trade but incorporates so much more in it.
Immigration. Japanese Prime Minister Abe said recently in a joint press conference with Obama that it would provide for free movement of goods and people within the countries covered by the agreement.
And then we have what are supposed to be conservatives that we elected in November that are going on MSNBC of all places. Mimi Walters, who goes on MSNBC, hasn't even read the thing. right? Her office did not confirm that she's read it. And now she's extolling the virtues of this on MSNBC, saying we need to give fast track authority. And what fast track authority is essentially giving Congress the ability to put this for a vote without any amendments over a 20-hour period to get this in and out of the public limelight quickly.
Before the people can read it and understand what's in it and then try to oppose it.
Right. Essentially, that's what fast-track authority is keeping it out of the public eye.
Well, you guys are just being unrealistic. I mean, has Obama done anything that can, you know, that you destroyed your trust in him? Come on, we can trust the man. Obviously, he must be doing the right thing.
You're right, John. What were we thinking?
Sorry.
Let's not only give Obama the ability to amend this document, but any president that's elected over the next 20 or 30 years, which we have no idea who that's going to be, the ability to, you know, essentially circumvent Congress. These are authorities that Congress should have. The will of the people, we have no ability to control any aspect of this.
Yeah. We are getting past time for this segment, so we're going to have a word from our sponsor for this half of Unite IE Radio, All-Star Collision, the Kings of Wreck and Roll. Back after this.
When you're in an auto accident, you want quality repairs done as fast as possible. All you need is All-Star. For over 20 years, All-Star Collision in Corona has delivered quality work and customer service with honesty and integrity. They offer free pickup and delivery, free estimates, and they're approved by all major insurance companies. They repair aluminum and fiberglass bodies with computerized frame straightening to get your car or truck back to factory spec perfection. You'll have your vehicle back fast and in showroom condition, safety checked, washed and detailed, fluids topped off with a lifetime warranty on paint and repairs. So exercise your freedom of choice and call All-Star Collision, the Kings of Wreck and Roll, at 951-279-9161. Mention AM590 and get a free rental car for up to 5 days or $100 off your repairs. 951-279-9161. All-Star Collision. 951-279-9161.
AM590. The answer. Let's get it started.
Welcome back to the final and most important segment of the Unite IE Radio Show. My name is Don Dix. I'm with John Hancock in Great Britain. And we have a couple of very, very important announcements for you. Places that you can go to connect and network with other conservatives around the Inland Empire and learn how to become part of the solution so that you can become involved in essentially saving the country from disastrous laws like TPP. Which is the Trans-Pacific Partnership we were just talking about. If you were at the Unite IE conference, watch your email for a special offer to come and see Ann Coulter on Thursday, July 9th at the DoubleTree Hotel in Ontario. Look for an email to get registered for the event, and you can register at at am590.info. You're going to get a special code, which is going to give you the ability to get a discount to the Ann Coulter event. You'll enter that code and get a discount to come here, Ann Coulter, on July the 9th. And it's going to be a great thing because her new book, Adios America, is getting a lot of play in the media. Ann Coulter certainly knows how to hang out the red meat.
There's no issue more important than immigration because it's the primary method that the left is using to fundamentally transform our country. She's written a great book on this. The subtitle is The Left's Plan to Turn Our Country into a Third World Hellhole. Ann's always great and entertaining and informative. So we encourage you to come out to this great event, which we hosted, by the way, by our own Don Dix and his partner, Jennifer Horn.
So watch your email for the discount code. Go to am590.info to enter that discount code and get some money off on that event.
And quickly, we have two other events we want to talk about. One is on June 17th. There'll be rallies across the country, including at Pete Aguilar, our local congressman's office. Congress is getting an illegal exemption by getting employer taxpayer-subsidized health insurance by claiming to be, with all 20,000 employees, a small business. It's hypocritical. It's outrageous. They're circumventing the law, and we're going to take that message to them on June 17th.
And then on July the 11th, the 5th Annual National Security Briefing will be held in Corona. You can get information at corona.org. And we're going to be featuring two very important speakers, Steve Coughlin, who is actually one of the individuals, he's rated one of the most important individuals in the Defense Department for understanding the threat of radical Islam, and he will be one speaker. Patrick Poole, who's an investigative journalist with PJ Media, will be a second, and we actually have a third speaker that we're going to announce sometime over the next couple of weeks, so stay tuned. That's all we have for the Unite Eye Radio program. Greg, John?
See you next week. See you next week.
Great to be with you. Back at 11:30 on Saturday with the next edition of the Unite IE Radio program. Gonna keep our guys.